Hello, everyone, and welcome to the What in the World is Dyscalculia podcast. I am your host, Dr. Honora Wall, and the podcast is sponsored by EduCalc Learning. You can visit EduCalcLearning.com for lots of information, training, free resources, and access to ask questions about dyscalculia, the math learning disability, and other things related to mathematical struggles. I also encourage you to stop by www.thedtri.org and check out the Dyscalculia Training and Research Institute and see what kind of things we've got going on over there. Lots of free resources through our nonprofit arm as well. And today in the podcast, this is really going to be the first of many shows about this topic. I want to talk a little bit about trends in the evaluation process and that school screening process. It's a complex topic, and I've got some guests lined up for future shows, some psychologists who can help speak directly to the issue of training required to administer a true evaluation that can screen for different learning disabilities, among other issues. Now, this is very complex and in-depth, which is why I'm not going to try to squish it all into one episode, but I want to give you some highlights of trends that concern me at this time. So let's start at the beginning. Why would a person need an evaluation? What is an evaluation? What am I even talking about? Well, when we notice that children are struggling in school more than we think they should based on their intellectual abilities, then we say, well, it looks like there might be a problem here. And if there is a problem, then we want to make sure they get the right resources, interventions, and accommodations to be successful. It's the learning equivalent of screening vision to see whether or not a person needs to wear prescription glasses, or maybe they just need readers, or maybe they can see just fine and there's something else we want to address. Same thing happens with learning differences, especially in students who are neurodivergent. Neurodivergence includes autism, ADHD, executive function issues, and the specific learning disorders, dyscalculia, dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyspraxia. And the problem a lot of people run into across the country is that it's hard to get evaluated. There are many reasons for that. Sometimes school districts or school personnel at your local school aren't sure what the legal requirements are. They're pretty clear. Federal law is pretty straightforward on this issue and has been for a very long time. The IDEA Act addresses the need for evaluations done by trained, qualified professionals. Emphasis is important there. And you can look more into that online if you have any questions about the IDEA Act. Evaluations can be expensive. Trained professionals are booked sometimes 6 or 9 months out. It can be hard to get an appointment. Some districts have school psychologists and some do not. And people have different levels of training and awareness. This is all also very brand new, this evaluation piece for dyscalculia especially. So there are a lot of adults and older students who have never been properly evaluated or just in their 30s, 40s, 50s got an evaluation and realized they have dyscalculia. So we have a lot of people with a lot of questions and a lot of concerns who are not getting a lot of adequate, appropriate help. This is just something we're going to keep working on. Awareness will change things. Having more people enter the field of psychology or neurology so that they can become trained to administer evaluations, that will help. Those, of course, are long-term solutions. And everyone is looking for short-term solutions because children are struggling right now, and we want to help them. However, I am seeing a trend. I'm doing a little more research to get my ducks in a row and my vetted, qualified research, my documentation and facts together. I don't want to spread any misinformation, but I am hearing a lot of chatter that different states are using their education agencies to help with the evaluation process for suspected learning disabilities. And this is a huge red flag. This is a real problem area that we need to address. There are many ways that a school or an education agency can screen for suspected learning disabilities. And there are a lot of things that go into a special education evaluation process at the team-based school level. Those include lots of different pieces of documentation, lots of different evidence, questionnaires with parents, questionnaires with teachers, interviews between the student and a special education director or a school supervisor or a school counselor sometimes, and then an analysis of classroom assessments, performance on state testing, the difference between how a student speaks in class and how they perform on a paper and pencil or a computer-based test. All of these different things are taken into consideration to try to determine whether or not we need to do further testing. If we need further testing, this is where we want to be very careful with what kind of testing students are getting and who is administering these tests. The only way to truly know whether or not a student probably has a learning disability is through a psychological or neuropsychological evaluation. Even that can be iffy because not everyone is trained to read those things the same exact way. There is a lot of personal interpretation based on the part of the person administering it. I'll save those stories for a different podcast. I would love for there to be more training on administering, interpreting, and evaluating for dyscalculia. That is a big need in the world of psychology and neurology, but that'll be a talk for a different day. The tests that are included in the true professional evaluation include a number of intelligence tests, behavioral tests, cognitive tests, and achievement tests. You'll hear a lot of words about Woodcock-Johnson or the Wechsler test, WISC, Stanford-Binet. There's a few different ones out there that are commonly used. And that kind of gives us a baseline and overall look at abilities. There are also a lot of very specific tests underneath that. The Woodcock-Johnson test of achievement, a wide-range achievement test, tests with a lot of letters involved, CCPT, GORT, CVLT, ASDS, and those will look for things like attention, language, memory and learning, motor control, visual spatial, autism, executive function, behavioral, reading, mathematical computation, mathematical understanding, processing speed, fluid reasoning. There's a lot that goes into determining whether or not a learning disability is present. It's very important that these tests are administered and interpreted by a trained professional. Let me talk for a quick minute about what is even involved in becoming a trained professional who can administer and read these tests. First of all, you got to be a doctor. You have to have already completed your doctoral degree in psychology or in neurology. Second, you have to already be done with your year of supervised clinical experience. Then you have to already have licensure. You have to already be certified to practice as a psychologist or neurologist. After that, you can apply and you have to show that you have documented training and knowledge in 8 different knowledge areas. You have to prove that you've already gone through your postdoc training. you have to have a lot of documented hours. Some programs over 1,000, 1,600 hours of clinical experience that has been supervised before you can even get into being fully prepared and approved for being a trained psychologist or neuropsychologist, getting your board certification, showing that you know how to properly do this work. And there are some very important reasons for that. One is that these tests are valid because they are standardized. And that means that to the best extent possible, every single person who takes this test anywhere in the country is going to have the most exact experience, exactly the same as is humanly possible. So a lot of the training is in how do you administer, how do you remove your own bias, how do you not accidentally influence the test-taking experience. Then you have to have a lot of training in interpreting and analyzing results. You cannot hand someone the whisk and an answer key and have them just give it to a fifth grader and then score it against the answer key and then decide whether or not a learning disability is present. Completely inappropriate, not valid, and dangerous, frankly, because we are muddying the waters of test validity and we are not getting accurate information. With all the information I have just given you, I can tell you I am not qualified to administer or interpret any of these tests. I am not a psychologist. I am not a neurologist, not a neuropsychologist. I do have my doctorate in education, so I can speak to curriculum and instruction. I can speak to educational research, and I can speak to the experience of creating a bridge between research, between evaluations, and the classroom experience or learning experience. But I stay in my lane, and this is very important that states do not push education professionals out of their lane and into the role of test administer or interpreter. It's completely inappropriate. It's not what we do. That is not our field and is not our training. Now, we have tons of training and we have a very important field and we have a very specific lane to be in that is vitally important and should be recognized on its own grounds. We should stop asking educators to ignore education and ignore their training in education to do all of this other work that should be done by different professionals. Not better, but certainly different. If you had a broken foot, you probably don't want to go to an ENT because they are eye, ear, nose, and throat. Not so much involved in fixing your broken foot. We need to use the right people for the right situations. And this is something that some states are moving away from because they're pushing this kind of work onto special education directors, area education agencies, different educational groups that cover professional development training, not evaluation. Now, of course, on the other hand, here's part of the problem. Schools do have a different kind of evaluation process that they use. So we have the same word, but it has very different meaning depending on the context. So a psychological or neuropsychological evaluation is going to be very different. That assessment is very different than what we mean when we talk about a school-based evaluation process and school-based assessments. The school evaluation process is going to include teacher recommendations, classroom observations, test results, including both summative and formative. It's going to include project assessments and the rubrics and whether or not children met a rubric. It's going to include parent observations. It's an entirely different conversation than what happens through the first evaluation I was talking about. And it's really important for parents to understand the difference between these two so that you know whether or not your student is getting what they need and what they're supposed to have. It's really important for schools to understand these differences so that we are offering the correct screening and evaluation process, and that we are not leaving things to chance, and we are not putting testing onto people who are not appropriately trained to do it. I think this is going to be a growing problem, mostly because there simply aren't enough people to administer evaluations in a timely fashion for all the people who have a need for it. We're already seeing that. It's also a growing problem because I've talked with quite a few groups of people, and we're discussing how getting diagnosis and appropriate support for dyscalculia is really turning into an affluent white situation. If you have the money and you have the access, then you're probably going to get the correct evaluation and help a lot faster. We already had a social justice component to this because we have such a large group of people, around 5 million K-12 students in the United States alone. That doesn't even talk about the adults facing this issue or people in other countries, but a huge group of people who are not being properly recognized and served. That is already a big problem. If we start really seeing a separation based on socioeconomic conditions, now we have an even bigger problem. Of course, the way to address some problems is to try to get help right away, and that's why I think some places are turning to any port in a storm. Let's just buy the booklet for this test, buy the scoring guide and answer key, and let someone just administer this test to this student so that we can move ahead. And the problem is that is not correct, that is not appropriate, we're not getting good data. And then that means we're not going to get good services. So I want you to make sure you know what is going on in your school district, and when someone says they're going to put your child or your student, if you're the teacher or the school administrator, that you're going to be given an evaluation to determine eligibility, I want you asking some questions. Exactly what is included in the evaluation? What kind of assessments? What kind of evaluation? Who is doing it? What is their training and background? That's a perfectly valid question to ask. You're not being rude if you say, "Can I ask who's going to be administering and scoring that test?" And if the answer is, "Well, we have classroom assessments, and they're going to be graded and interpreted by the classroom teacher." Fantastic. Exactly. That's who is supposed to do it. Well, we're also going to have some screeners and some things that will help us identify if we think it's really an issue related to dyscalculia, because we're looking at processing speed, subitization, we're looking at computational skills and basic facts, and to see whether or not they hit an appropriate grade level. And those sort of screeners can be given by a wide variety of people. Hopefully, you're already using the free one that TouchMath put out because it's fantastic. But there are a lot of people who can administer something like that, make sure the screening happens, and interpret it. Not a problem. If they say, "Well, we're going to do an evaluation specifically looking for autism, ADHD, executive function, learning disabilities," okay, pause. That needs to be the school psychologist, an outside psychologist, or a neuropsychologist. That's it. It's a very small group of people who are appropriately trained to create the testing atmosphere, administer the test properly, using given conditions, avoiding their own bias or influencing the test, and who know how to read the results and interpret. It's not just, "Oh, you got this score, and that puts you in this percentile." What does that mean? And what does it mean in the context of all of the other tests and the percentiles that came back for these different areas? So just make sure that you know. Make sure you're asking those questions. And if you're not happy with the answers, know that you can request different evaluations, and that they're going to be administered by the appropriate people. And if you are in a school or in a district, please make sure you're doing that as well. And let's make sure we're getting the right kind of data so that we can use it properly. That's how we're going to get help for people who have dyscalculia or not. Not everyone has dyscalculia. It's only about 8, maybe 10% of the population. So some of these evaluations are going to come back as saying, all right, we see something, but it's not this. That's fine. That's completely valid. We need to make sure that we are not missing the 8 to 10% who have dyscalculia. Because for those people, they are never going to move forward and reach the success they are capable of without the right support in place. If you'd like to know more about that support, if you'd like to know more about the evaluation process, or you have other questions about dyscalculia, please reach out to me. I'm pretty easy to find. You can email me at Honora, H-O-N-O-R-A, at educalclearning.com. Also, you can email me, Honora, at thedtri.org. You can find me on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube. Check out either of the websites. We have a support group page for teachers, and that's a public page. So lots of information that we try to give out for free as often as possible. I'm Dr. Honora Wall, and I really appreciate you spending the time to listen to the What in the World is Dyscalculia podcast today. I hope you got a lot of good information out of this one, and we will revisit this topic with other experts in the future so we can hear what they have to say. Thanks for listening.